Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips of the BC. It is Saturday, the 21st of January, Anno Domini 2012, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to have news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. It's time for the news. On Wednesday, major websites such as Wikipedia and Reddit went dark in protest of SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act, and PIPA, the Protect Intellectual Property Act, and many others changed their look. At the same time, millions of social media users took to the internet to express their own opinion on the two bills, and they don't like them one bit. In a tweet Thursday morning, Google announced that it collected over 7 million unique signatures Wednesday on its anti-SOPA PIPA petition. Google's anti-SOPA petition, Google's anti-SOPA page got 13 million hits. Wikipedia Foundation said in a press release that 162 million people logged on during its blackout of English language pages. And during that blackout, over 8 million American users used Wikipedia's links to find out the contact information of their elected officials to speak with them about SOPA and PIPA. The Wikipedia blackout is over and the public has spoken, said Sue Gardner, Wikipedia Foundation's executive director. 162 million of you saw our blackout page asking if you could imagine a world without free knowledge. You said no. You shut down the congressional switchboards and you melted their servers. Your voice was loud and strong. On Wednesday, SOPA, Stop SOPA, PIPA, Tell Congress, and Facts Without Wikipedia became the top tweeted terms of the day. Twitter said that throughout the day, there were nearly 4 million SOPA-related tweets. Meanwhile, in the offline world, approximately 1,000 protesters hit the streets of New York outside the offices of Senators Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand. It's politics. In an anti-SOPA PIPA rally. By Thursday, 19 senators, whose previous position was unclear, announced their opposition to PIPA. SOPA co-sponsor Representative Ben Quayle, Republican of Arizona, pulled his name from the bill Thursday. However, Representative Lamar Smith, Republican of Texas, SOPA's author and main sponsor, remained steadfast in his support of the bill. And, of course, the whole point behind this bill is that at some point, if you link, pay attention to this, if you link to a website that has anywhere on it copyright material, your site can be taken down. That's among the many things that are in the bill. The bill's not dead. They're going to bring it back and bring it back and bring it back because the MIAA, the MPAA, the Motion Picture Association of America, and the RIA, the Recording Industry Artists of America, both want this. So it'll be back because they have very, very deep pockets and they can buy whoever they need to buy to get it passed. We just have to make sure that we let it be known we don't want it passed. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, are you for or against SOPA and PIPA? The choices are for, against, ambivalent, and stupid. So far we've got 38 votes. 71% of you are against it. 16 of you are ambivalent. 6 of you are ambivalent. 5 of you are stupid, and nobody's for it. When you're done with the poll, of course, I suspect you'll have plenty more to say. So you can head over to yet another brilliant website by checking the yellow box underneath the poll, clicking on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to that magnificent website where you can enter your opinion on it. And we'll see. I probably, looking back on it this morning, I probably shouldn't have written the word stupid. What I often do is put in, I'm too lazy to look it up or know what we're talking about. And this time I just wrote stupid instead of lazy. And I apologize.
I thought you meant that the law was stupid.
Well, nobody else thought so, apparently. At any rate, that's our question to you. How do you feel about SOPA and PIPA? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-795-5299. 7900415.
I actually had a couple of people ask me, why is Google supporting piracy? Because they were Google had their logo blacked out for the day. And because if you look at it, stop online piracy. Well, yeah, we all want to stop online piracy. The whole point of this was that these laws, the bills that are pending, would do nothing to stop online piracy. They would add censorship layer to the web. They would allow governments and businesses to take websites off the internet, even if they're not in America, and without any due process. You know, you could claim a copyright violation, and the website was taken off the air just for a claim. No proof, no right. due process, no nothing.
Right. And that's what really bothers most people, no due process. We still like to pretend this is a nation of laws, and we should follow those laws.
And then a couple of days later, the FBI did a big raid on a pirate website.
Right.
So, and that was one of the other points people were making.
Megadownload.com.
We already have laws in place that stop piracy and, right. and allow prosecution of pirates. What do we need another one for?
Right. Exactly right. All right. We're going to go to the phones. You can give us a call, of course. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Linda did from Greece, New York. Hi there, Linda. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Peachy. Thanks.
Okay. I don't know how to word this, but I'll try the best I can. I got an iPad for Christmas. Okay. And in iTunes on my XP computer, I have my music in a list. You know, in a list, and then it has the time, how much time it takes to play the song. On my iPad, I've been trying to get the same view, but when I go to my iPad, I've got music on it. It comes in album view. How do I get it to do list view just like my computer?
There are buttons at the bottom of the music player app in the iPad that allows you to change it to song view or artist view or album view. And there's an other button to let you go to other views.
Okay, because I looked it up on my iPad, and there was a gentleman, he said, connect the iPad to your PC and launch iTunes. Select iPad 2 option in the iTunes sidebar. Well, the only thing in the sidebar is ping. So I haven't got the faintest idea what this guy's talking about.
The other sidebar. On the left side of iTunes is where your iPad is listed. But this doesn't have anything to do with how the iPad displays your music.
Ignore that guy entirely. Yeah. He's talking about something else completely.
Oh.
iTunes is how you put your music on the iPad.
Right. But, yeah, there are those lines of buttons. Where are they, across the bottom?
Across the bottom of the player, yeah. I don't have my iPad with me, so I don't know exactly
what
they mean.
Why am I iPad in front of me? So.
Yeah, when you go into music, across the bottom of the window.
That says playlist, songs, artists. Album and more.
Right, you get to choose how you want the songs displayed by tapping those buttons at the bottom.
Okay. Why the? Okay. Yeah, but most of the time, it comes up in album view.
It should remember the last view you had, and when you go back into the music player, it goes into that same view you left it in.
No, it doesn't. That's my problem.
Let me see if I can list here. I've got my iPod in the car and in my coat, but it does.
Yeah, I know.
It does work right.
My iTouch does the same thing. So that's why I was trying to figure it out.
Well, no. Say my iPod always shows the last song I was playing, and it shows it in the sorting list. I had it tapped on the bottom of the window.
Yeah. Well. Okay. But I've got it in song view, which gives me the songs in alphabetical order. But the way I've got it set up on iTunes is I've got
it has no bearing on iTunes. iTunes and iPad are completely separate. They all have their own settings.
So in other words, so I can't get the same settings on iTunes on my computer as I do on here.
Yeah, you just do them on the iPad. Whatever you set in iTunes, the view you set in iTunes has nothing to do with the view in the iPad.
I know, but what I'm trying to do on my iPad, Steve, is I'm trying to get it by artist. You know, like
right. So tap the artist button to sort it by artist.
Yeah, but then it comes up in album view.
So you have to type the artist button, not the album button.
Yeah, Yeah. I have the artist button. But I guess maybe I'm asking for something I can't do. Because when I have the artist button, I know they're two separate things, but when I have the artist button on iTunes on a computer, it has it in list view, not in album view. Am I explaining this right?
We're not quite understanding what you mean.
Okay.
But what you do on the computer has nothing to do with what you do on the iPad.
What does it
They're
look like
separate.
On the what does it look like on iTunes?
On iTunes, I have on music, I have a list, and it says song. I can have song, genre, a whole bunch of things. I have song. It lists all the songs, and then on the next column, it lists the artists in alphabetical order. And then on the next column, it lists how long the song plays for. So in other words, if I have Al Hurt, I have 50 songs from Al Hurt. Al Hurt will be all there. Then it'll have Bay City Rollers, you know, and then down, it'll be in alphabetical order.
Right.
But it'll be in a list. I can go to album view on my computer, but I don't like it that way.
What it sounds like she's got is regular list view sorted by artist.
Exactly. And I'm trying to get that on my iPad, and I can't seem to do it.
You tap the artist button on the iPad, and it sorts it by artist.
Yeah, but it sorts it by artist in album view, if you know what I'm talking about, where the, you know, in little tiny boxes. I just want it as a list. Can't, you know.
Was that a separate pull-down?
Trying to bring up a picture of it so I try to see what she's saying.
Well, is that my question is that a separate pull down? In other words, you sort by artist and you view by something else.
Yeah, but there is no.
It views by how you sort it. So when you tap artist at the bottom, it views it by artist and it sorts it alphabetically by artist. When you tap on album, it sorts it by album.
But what she's saying is she's getting an icon view, not a list view.
Exactly. Thank you.
And what she wants is a list view by artist.
Maybe that's showing whether there's another setting as far as detail. You know, like in other Windows, you know how there's a detail view versus
right. That's
icon.
What I'm saying. Yeah. Is there somewhere separate?
For a detail list.
You pick the type of view as opposed to the sort of the view.
I haven't been able to find it. That's what I...
And like I said, I don't have an iPad, so I don't know how you can do that.
I've got a Mac here, but... iTunes, but I don't think it'll be much help.
My iPad's in the car. We'll dig around, see if we can find and figure out what you're trying to do and see if there's a way to do it.
Okay.
But as far as I always did, I hit artist and it shows me all the artists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, I can hit the album for Al Hurt and then it'll give the album and then it'll give everything else, but it's not as a list.
Right, it's not the same list you're looking at on iTunes.
Exactly.
Nope, we'll look into it, Linda.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks. it may well be that, like I said, I don't have one, so I don't know, but, it seems that there's gotta be a way to pick both the view, which would be either icon or list, and then the sort in that view, which would be, now it might be, Linda, I know you're still listening, what you might try and is to pick list view. And then click on the artist column at the top to sort that way. I wonder if that'll work.
Mm-hmm. It's worth a shot. I mean,
or I could just be talking out my hat because I don't actually listen to music on an iPod. So
maybe if we get a deep Windows question, I'll have time to run out to the car and get my iPad.
There you go.
Yeah. Or just post it on
post it in the forums. Yeah. That'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting dichotomy. There are differences between you wouldn't think there would be, but there's differences between the way iTunes does some things and the iPod and iPad.
Two different devices.
They are merging it. The people have been calling it the iOSification of the Macintosh, that especially in Mac OS X Lion, a lot of the features in Lion they brought in from iOS, the full screen mode, the giant application view, so you have all your pages of applications. The multi-touch features that it uses if you have the trackpad. And I can see them making it closer and closer so that if you're used to one device, you can easily use the other device. But for us long-time Mac users, I just ignore all those new features that I don't like on my Mac because I'm not used to doing it that way.
Right. What's interesting to me, though, is that clearly they had multiple teams do, you know, different teams doing the different devices.
Yeah.
And that they did not coordinate closely, which is just weird to me. You would think that with his legendary attention to detail, Steve Jobs might have
maybe something like that was overlooked, you know, given his state of mind or whatever, you know.
Well, but his state of mind wasn't his state of mind 4 or 5 years ago when the Star started out. So
yeah, but
well, for the first several years of iOS, it was a completely separate thing, a separate platform, no or very little interaction between iOS and macOS. And in the last year or so, we've seen it merge a little closer and closer together.
Oh, I understand that, but I'm still saying that it surprises me that, you know, given
mm-hmm. yeah.
Jobs' legendary attention to detail, something like this would slip through.
Or something, even a year after, if it was an issue with folks, that right. it wouldn't have been addressed.
Right.
And I'm sure it would have
just
been.
Just because I don't know what yeah, the thing same. Looks like, it's very possible that it's doable. I just don't know how to do it.
So. Same here. Yeah. Not a clue.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. Back to SOPA and PIPA for a moment. The problem is really, I can't think of something you could link to aside from Richard Stallman's website that doesn't have some sort of copyrighted something on it.
Yeah.
You know, even the sites that I've created, I copyright my logos.
Mm-hmm.
So if you link to them, technically, you're in violation of SOPA.
I wonder if anybody's tapping into the Soundbites one.
I don't care if people link to sound bites. I mean,
that's the whole point of the internet is right. you link to other places. Google wouldn't work because all Google does is give you links to other sites and right. And somebody else's content.
And of them are copyrighted.
Yeah.
IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, a lot of what they have is copyrighted.
Bing is no different.
Yahoo is no different. None of those places are any different.
Well, like you say, and that's the whole purpose is to get out there and get exposure. I mean, most places, I mean, granted, maybe they're trying to, you know, slice down the middle here of what's what, but I mean.
And I've already said we may be taking down a bunch of, I may have to take down soundbites. We've got lots of stuff that could be considered copyright violation on our site. And it's all satire, and that makes it all, you know, okay, but not under the new law. Right now it's okay, but it won't be soon. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. In a letter to Zappos customers, CEO Tony Tsai explains that the site was hacked and that information including names, email addresses, billing and shipping addresses, phone numbers, the last 4 digits of credit card numbers, and encrypted passwords for Zappos' 24 million customers may have been exposed. The good news, according to Say, is that the database storing actual credit card and payment data was not breached. Zappos' response to the incident seems to be appropriate so far. It has notified customers. It reset all passwords to force customers to create new ones to replace those that may have been exposed or cracked as a result of the breach. Companies such as Zappos should have technology in place that monitors activity on their networks and reports in real time on suspicious activity or activity that does not conform to security policy. The sooner an organization detects a breach, the more quickly it can contain it. An incident like the Zappos breach is a poignant reminder for customers to make sure they use different passwords for different internet sites, especially e-commerce sites that may contain credit card or other financial details. By using unique passwords, you can ensure the damage from a breach is limited to that one site or service. Zappos has already taken the initiative to reset all user passwords. When creating a new one, users should remember basic password practices and make sure the password they choose is long enough and complex enough to resist cracking attempts. By the way, that length is now 17 characters. We'll talk about that a little more in a minute. Customers may want to alert any affected credit card companies to be on the alert. It is advisable for people to use an identity protection service that alerts them if there is any suspicious activity on their accounts. I think I used alerts too many times in that sentence. It is fortunate that the hackers apparently haven't breached the actual credit card and payment data. That alone minimizes the impact of this attack to some extent. Still, the data they're compromised have significant value and could be used for identity theft. So, if you're a Zappos customer, be vigilant about watching your accounts for suspicious activity. Are you a Zappos customer? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
All right, going back for a second about Linda's issue.
Yeah.
I had somebody text this here, and it says, I think Linda is talking about the cover flow versus list. My phone shows a cover flow in landscape position, list in the upright position. Just a thought.
That could
and
be.
That's Good C thought. From Rochester. Thank you. And I told him thank you, and then we're going to put his answer out there. But
And I also found and then finally remembered, when you tap on an album cover, it brings up a list of all the songs and their order and their durations.
Right. She knew that. She was looking for that for everything all at once, though. She had said she knew that. If you tapped on the Al Hurt album, you saw the songs and all that stuff. And that's exactly what she saw. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, C from Rochester.
C. Here's the thing. To go back to the Zappos business, computers keep getting better and faster and yada, yada, yada. And cracking them becomes easier and easier and easier. There's a great website, which we may have talked about before, grc.com/haystack. And I think we have talked about it before. And what it does is it actually shows you, you can type in any kind of password, and obviously if you're at all suspicious, you won't type in your passwords, but something similar. And it will tell you, if you scroll down, it will tell you just how long it will take to crack. So, for example, if you type, if your password is, well, password, even the just an offline fast attack will take 2 seconds. A massive cracking scenario online will take 0.002 seconds. 2/1000ths of a second. 2/1000ths of a second. So you can see that as you...
And this is just brute force trying every single letter combination.
Right.
The first thing the bad guys do is feed your password a dictionary.
Right.
So any dictionary word will be broken in seconds.
Well, the first thing they do is they type the word password.
Password, yeah.
Then the second thing they type is 123456, then 123456.
What
four,
about
five.
11111?
Yep.
I had somebody do that. 11111, eight of them, because he had to have eight characters. So he put 11111. No, that's not good. I mean, that's right up there with, you know, taping the password to the underside of the...
Well, what's the new joke? I had to have an eight character password, so I typed in... Happy, grumpy, sleepy, sneezy, dopey, doc, bashful, and Snow White.
Which is actually a pretty good password.
Which is a really good password.
Steve Gibson, who runs the Gibson Research Company, said he overheard something that started prompting him to write this haystack thing. He overheard in a coffee shop someone complaining at the next table about their company makes them change the passwords every month or every 3 months or whatever. And that's very common for a lot of passwords.
Yeah.
And you can't use the same password of the last three passwords that you've used, or the last four, or the last five. And so he's so mad about it that when it makes him change his password, he'll change it 6 times. So now he's back to his original password again.
Yep. Yep. And the reality is we're looking at this possibility at RIT. You know, how do you do this? Well, you should have a minimum of a 17-character password.
Right. Longer turns out to be much better than complex.
Right, and also much better than changing it regularly. So, for example, if your password is, this is a very long password, which, again, you won't want to use, but it would take, even at the massive cracking array scenario, 1.16 billion centuries. To break.
I don't think you'll be around to worry about it that long.
And if it's something like, it was the best of times, comma, it was the worst of times, that will take 4.8, and I don't even have any spaces in it, but mm-hmm. I have one capital and a comma, it will take 4.8300,000 trillion centuries. to break at the fastest way.
Well, I figure I figure if my age and if I can create one that'll at least last a century.
Yeah,
I'm good.
You're good.
Because you know what? After that, I ain't gonna be around, so I don't care. Yeah.
And one of the things you can do is just padding. So say your password is password. That's a real quick password. But then put 20 periods after it, or 20 commas, or 20
pound signs. Or password on this particular computer.
Yeah.
Or password on this laptop.
And a lot of times the people say they can't remember so many different passwords.
Right.
One of the nice tricks is use the website you're at as part of your password. So you go to Amazon to create an account. You can say, this is my Amazon password.
Nick, if
and
you
that's
would.
A pretty
well,
long
except
password.
Except for the fact that if they guess one of them, they've now still guessed all the others.
They'll have to guess the pattern then, yeah.
Right.
What if you were to type in desktop password? How strong is that?
Apparently it's not letting me. There we go. Yeah, desktop password with no capitals would take 6.6 months. Desk with a capital
D.
D and T P. With a capital T and a capital P for password would now take 1.7800 centuries.
And that's good.
Desktop
a number
password
in it.
45 would take 9.55 million centuries. Add an exclamation point on the end, and it suddenly takes 1.28 trillion centuries. So the more complex is certainly better, but what's more important is length rather than complexity.
Yeah, and I mean, you're just changing a couple things there, added enough to it by making it a capital T. Now, you say you're not changing much, making it that complex just by making things capital versus lowercase, which, again, folks are very lazy at times, and they want easy use, so they type everything in lowercase.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, if you typed happy 34 monkey, remember?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
With a capital H, a capital M, and an exclamation point at the end, it's 15.67 thousand centuries.
That's not bad.
And that's at the massive cracking array scenario, right? Yeah. I mean, that's like you give it to the CIA. The online attack scenario, which is 1,000 guesses a second, it would take 1.57 thousand trillion centuries. So the reality is that you can make a fairly complex but easy to remember password. And people are always saying, I can't remember a lot of passwords. What they're really saying is, I'm pretending to be stupid because I'm lazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can remember a lot of passwords. And even if you can't, you only have to remember one. Because there's a program called KeePass, KeePass.
And LastPass and OnePassword.
LastPass, OnePass, there's a bunch of them. Yeah. And what they do is they're password vaults, and they're highly encrypted. And all you have to remember is the password to that one, and it'll remind you, and then you can get all the others that you want. And there is a version of KeePass for Windows, for Linux, for the Mac, for the Android, for iOS. So you can carry your database with you everywhere. I keep it on my phone, and it's highly encrypted, 256-character encryption. And the password is complex. So if you wanted my passwords, it would take you a very, very, very long time to get them.
In other words, not in this lifetime.
Not in this lifetime. And so, but I can type it in fairly quickly. And get my thing going. They also now talk about, of course, putting a password on your iPad or your iTouch or your iPhone or your Android device. And they give you those, Apple seems to give you a choice of very complex or four numbers.
You can change that four-number keypad into a full keyboard so you can type any password you want.
Right, but those are your two choices. On the Android, you can have multiple, you can have six numbers or whatever you want.
A various combination.
Actually, he talks about that here somewhere. But somewhere in here he talks about how if you have four numbers for your keypad, for your combination, it's really fairly easy to guess by the oil on the screen.
Yep.
However, it takes like 20 some odd tries to get that. However, if you simply use one of the numbers twice and not necessarily in sequence, just, 1, 2, 3, 1 or 1, 2, 2, 3, whatever it is.
Dave's trying it
right now. Even if they see the oil on the screen, it greatly increases the number of attempts they have to make. However, if you use only two numbers or one number, it becomes ridiculously easy. One number is ridiculously easy.
Well, on my cell phone, I've got the lockout.
Yep.
And or lookout, rather. And I love that. Because,
yeah, lookout is great. It doesn't do quite what we're talking about
yeah,
here.
But,
yeah,
but no, I mean, again, something else a little different. But, yeah, no, that's another thing, though, I've been thinking of adding is, you know, some type of password protection. As I get more and more stuff on this phone,
right,
something like that would be...
Right, yeah. Because you know what? If you lose your phone, it's a bit of a tragedy to you. But if you lose your phone with my private phone numbers in it, I'm really angry now.
That's the other thing, though.
Yeah.
And I have to apologize to folks. I know once I got this new phone, for the longest time, I had pretty well eliminated butt dialing.
Yeah.
It's back.
How is it back?
Well, what? Trying to do things one-handed?
Oh, right. Sometimes you do the wrong right.
Yeah,
right,
and I'm
right,
dialing people again that I don't mean to, and they right. sit there and say, did you call me? Well, yeah, sort of. I just blame it on butt dialing.
Right,
my,
right.
My fingers.
Someone did that to me the other day, and she was shocked and when say, oh, I must have dialed wrong. It confused me when I heard your voice. You weren't who I was expecting to answer.
Well, I'm sitting there trying to, you know, scroll down, and this hand isn't very nimble, and I'll push the wrong person, so I dial them, and then they, of course, it shows up on their phone, then I call them, and they go, you called me? I didn't mean to.
That annoys the heck out of me. When someone calls back and said, did you call me? One, we're a company. There's a lot of people that work here. How should I know?
Right.
Two, listen to the stupid message I just left you.
Right.
If it was heavy breathing.
Although I did not too long ago get a call. Right. I did not too long ago get a call, and I said hello, and the person said, who is this?
You called me.
I knew who it was. The caller ID came up. It was a friend of mine. I said, it's Nick. I said, what the hell are you doing there? I'm smart, however. Where do you think I am? He said, I called my girlfriend's number. I said, no, take a look at your phone. You called my number. He looked at the phone, said something I won't repeat, and said, I'm really sorry. I said, not a problem.
Well, hang on a minute. I'll let you talk to her.
But that was an interesting little occurrence. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and I don't know why you're doing it, but for some reason you're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites. We are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Happy 34 Monkey, everybody. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour...
I like this one.
Sound bites. That's nice. Steve did find... are we not talking about that yet?
Well, it's...
To answer Linda's question.
Right, I found a picture on an iPad of List View... but it doesn't say how to get there other than just you hit the songs button and it sorts by song and shows you those songs in a list.
Well, she has that. I think she wanted it listed by artist.
Yeah. I think artist and album shows you the album cover art.
Right. I think so, too. And that's her problem. She doesn't want it in icon view. She wants it in list view like it is on the iTunes. All right. Jerry Yang rode Yahoo's swift rise and subsequent decline over 17 years. Now the co-founder of the one-time dominant internet company has decided to stop hanging on. 17 years after co-founding Yahoo, Jerry Yang walks away from the web portal, and it could signal a clean break now that it has a new CEO. Yang, who was 43 years old, said Tuesday he was resigning from Yahoo's board, severing ties to the company he co-founded with David Filo in 1995 while both were at Stanford University as graduate students. Yang also said he would leave the boards of Yahoo Japan and Alibaba Group Holding, in which Yahoo holds significant stakes. Yang has been under pressure for weeks, grappling with criticism over his multiple roles at Yahoo, including co-founder, director, former chief executive, and large shareholder. Some investors questioned whether Yang had conflicts of interest, as Yahoo in recent months explored its strategic options, including whether or not to sell all or parts of the company. Yang is leaving after Yahoo this month hired a new chief executive, Scott Thompson. the former president of eBay's PayPal unit. He fills a void created 4 months earlier when the board fired Carol Bartz. Yahoo is also closing in on a deal to shed its Yahoo Japan and Alibaba stakes without creating a hefty tax bill. Activist investor Dan Loeb's Third Point LLC in recent months has threatened a proxy fight against Yahoo and called for the resignation of Yang and several other directors. In a reflection of investor sentiment toward Yang, Yahoo stock gained 3% to $15.90 in after-hours trading after the founder announced his departure from the company's board. It's always a kind of a sad thing when you say, I'm leaving, and the stock goes up. Yang himself made the decision to exit the board, according to a couple of people who are familiar with the situation. Yang didn't immediately inform all of his fellow directors that he would step down. In making his decision, Yang also didn't discuss potential external pressures facing the board. Mr. Yang just decided that now was the time. Anything else is speculation. Should Yang have resigned? And what does this bode for Yahoo? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Joe did from Cheektowaga, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Well, I had a question about talking about passwords. There's a lot of browsers. Firefox comes to mind, where you can set up a master password for all your form fill-ins, including, you know, user ID and password. I was wondering, how secure is that?
You know what? That's a lovely question. They're all a little bit different. Right? So the quality of that.
You have to start with a good master password as well.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the software, it'll tell you, oh, this is weak, this is medium, this is strong, this is very strong, that sort of thing.
Well, according to this thing I found, when you have master passwords on, it uses triple DES in CBC mode to encrypt all of your passwords. So that's that should be really
that
good.
That's fairly, yeah.
As long as you use a good password. I always get a kick out of that on cop shows when they say, oh, you know, we'll break that password today or break the encryption today. No, you can't break the encryption. You can guess the password.
Yeah.
But you know, any computer, you know, modern encryption cannot be broken.
Yeah,
unless
especially
you use
a weak password. Let me see if I can break his password.
And and I always wonder if that's the producers are doing that for the stupid criminals. Because they always show when you're guessing a password, the other end tells you which letter is right, which is
right.
Completely wrong. It tells you yes or no to the whole thing. So there's no way to know. Oh, I got the fifth character right.
Right,
but that's how you always see them in the TV shows doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It'll get the first, then go the second, the third.
So it's fairly secure. You got to be careful, but it is certainly fairly secure.
Oh, that's good to hear. I mean, it's easier to use because it's integrated into your browser rather than using a separate product like LastPass
that. Well, the one thing that the separate products do is they will store passwords everywhere, not just in your browser. So they'll do file server passwords, they'll do email passwords, they'll do network connection passwords.
Yeah, you can save anything you want to save.
Yeah.
And like I said, the nice thing about that is I can take that same database and move it to my phone. And I'm good to go there, too. So I can have the same password in all my machines, all my operating systems, including my phone.
Oh, wouldn't that be something, though? Oh, you do whole drive encryption with TrueCrypt or something like that. Oh, I think I'll go into LastPass and, wait a minute, a bit of a race condition here.
But luckily, I moved it over to my phone.
Yep.
That's a good point. If you have a backup on your phone, that'd be great.
Yep. I don't know that LastPass does that, but KeePass does.
Gets me, though, is these websites that the programmers were really, really lazy, and you try and put in a complex password with symbols and mixed case and numbers, and they say, oh, you can't use $ in your password. That just kind of infuriates me.
I hate that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Every now and then we hear a story about some bank website that only allows 8 characters, and if you make a character with more or make a password with more than 8 characters, it ignores the rest of them. So only the first 8 characters are significant. I heard about that.
That was true of XP. Via modular messaging, which I was recently working with, where my boss change my set my initial password, and I go, and it goes, okay, you must change your password because it forces you to change it. And I put a dollar sign in my password, which is fine. I'm going about my business, and the next time I go to log in, oh, that password's wrong. Well, it turns out dollar sign is an illegal character to use in a password for modular messaging. But it doesn't tell you that. It just, that's good. we'll just skip right over that.
Yep. Gotta love it.
Nice.
And the other thing that really infuriated me, though, is there. I'll just say there's a certain 401k financial company that has an IVR for when you call in and a website. And they basically make you use the same code for both. So if you want to be able to use the IVR when you call in, you can't put any letters in your passcode. Otherwise, that's the PIN for the IVR.
Right.
And then just good gravy.
Mind-boggling.
What were they thinking?
Yep. No, I'm with you. Thanks. It's happening all over that way. A lot of we have at where I work, I'm on the password committee, and we're making all these passwords, and half the people in the committee are going, except we're using this system called X that doesn't allow more than 7 characters because we've been using it since the 50s, you know, and we see that a lot, that, you know, what they call our
Was that part of Al Gore's thing, you know, bringing up the internet and doing the passwords too?
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, we call them legacy systems.
The polite word, right?
Legacy. It's Bodega. Politer, but it's one more syllable. But at any rate, the idea is that until they get rid of these systems, they're stuck with 7 character passwords. And
yeah,
no,
indeed.
And they're case insensitive. You can't use numbers. You can't use symbols. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Your password might as well be password, except, oh wait, that's 8 characters.
Oops.
Well, there's also the interesting thing of going kind of in the opposite direction. There's a lot of systems that you have related systems. They call it single sign-on. It's like, okay, yep. You authenticate once here, and then some sort of token is used wherever you need to authenticate. I mean, a good example is a lot of IIS sites will use the Windows logon. So it's like, okay, you log into the Windows domain, and then in order to get on the website to do whatever, they take your credentials out of your login. That's kind of interesting. They don't use separate security for that.
Right.
Plus, you know, speaking of the people that they'll just go, oh, you have to change your password every month, they'll just go change it 10 times or whatever they need to do to get back to the same one. Well, most systems, when you set those up, you can set up, oh, you can't change your password for 7 days or something like that. That's an easy way to administrate around that sort of tomfoolery.
Right. And mm-hmm. then you have to check the password, because I know that some people, if they have to change the password every month, they put the month in the password.
Yeah, password 1,
oh, yeah,
password
that,
2,
I
password 3.
I used to do that all the time. Okay, right. 01, 02, 03.
Or,
except
you know,
if you go on to Solaris, where it says, oh, that password is too similar. Try changing more characters.
Exactly right.
That's
exactly
a really good idea.
At a bank I used to work at, we had to change it every 28 days. Which
a
meant
lunar
by,
cycle?
Well, yes, and it meant by the middle of the year, you were off the monthly, mm-hmm. changing yep. it on the first of the month, and so you really couldn't use that pattern. I did work with somebody who wanted their password to be A.
Uh-huh. Oh, boy.
I explained to her very carefully that would be the absolute first password that would be tried. So she said, okay, then, let's make it Z.
Okay, that's the 26th password tried.
Somebody's going to stop after 25 tries.
That's right. Well, it wasn't why. I give up. I can't imagine where we would go from here.
Plans. That was on a SpongeBob episode where Plankton went, we've tried every plan in the book from A through Y. And Karen, his computer, says, well, what about plan Z?
Yeah, right.
I'm sometimes sorry my son has grown out of SpongeBob, because I liked having an excuse to watch that.
He still records
it,
though.
Well, you're just a kid all grown up.
That's right. Yep. Not that grown up.
Well, he still records it, though.
That's right.
He just has to watch it on his computer so they don't realize that he's actually still watching.
That's right.
Nothing wrong
with
that.
Well, that's what grandkids are for. You can watch along with the grandkids,
right? See, there you go. Or you're prepping for grandkids you may have someday.
Yeah, but see, the grandkids, though, you can also take them to movies.
Yeah, right.
And I've used that because there's a particular movie I want to see, and I'll call my grandkids. Hey, you want to go see this? Yeah, Papa. All right, let's go. I'm
well,
good.
We had a friend.
I got a bunch of kids.
We had a friend who used to call up and say, are you taking Amelia to see X, whatever, you know, whatever the movie was? Yeah, why? Can I come? Yes, of course.
I'll help supervise.
Sure, yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, when you're the one adult at that kid's movie, it doesn't,
yeah, right.
It doesn't look good.
Unless you can point to at least one of them as yours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or at least you can go there with, you know, take them. I've run into this too. You know, some of them want to go see one movie and the others want to go see the other.
When they get to a certain age, that's fine.
Yeah. My kid, you know, my grandkids, my grandson Cody's going to be 14. Darn. Kid's taller than me now.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, go 13, 12.
That's right.
So.
Here's where you know you're getting old. My daughter is going to be 20. I don't know why, but that
dude,
number hit
me. I still remember the day she was born.
So do I.
My stepdaughter's almost 30.
Yeah, right.
Because I married into it.
Right. One time I took my daughter and several of her friends to a movie that I really also wanted to see. And we're all going, I'm starting, you know, we went to buy the tickets and I said, you know, three for whatever the movie was. And she looked at me and says, where do you think you're going? She's about 15. Said, I thought I'd see the movie. Oh, no. No, you can go see that movie. All right, that's acceptable. I'll go see that movie.
Can't even sit in a different part of the theater?
That's what I asked her. Can I at least, you know, I'll sit somewhere else? I'll sit, you know, wherever you want me to
do.
Two
rows back.
Yeah.
I'll pretend I don't even know you.
No, I don't want you in the theater, Dad. Okay, fine. Thank you. That was, you know, that's just leave the knife where it is because it stops the bleeding.
So far, I've been lucky, you know, with the six grandkids. You know, I've lucked out.
Yeah.
But I got a feeling that's going to come, you know, come.
Well, but don't forget now, she to this day now, we came home and she said, all right, look, I've planned every movie you and I are going to go see together.
Sweet. Now
that's right. That's right.
You did right there,
so
dude.
She went past it, but there was that time when she didn't, you know,
mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
She'd get out of the car, she said, don't give me a kiss. All right, so I'd shake her hand. Oh, no, you know, she was at that age where she didn't want her friends to see her kissing.
That wasn't cool.
It wasn't cool. So she would say, okay, Dad, can you give me a kiss before we turn into the parking lot? Absolutely, honey. That would work.
Hey.
All right, thanks a lot, Joe. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You know, you still treasure those moments, though. You know,
that is the truth.
You know, like you were saying, though, she comes home for the holidays. Instead of going out with her friends, she still planned having, night in with you guys?
Yep. New Year's Eve.
Doesn't get any better than that, dude. Trust me.
What in the world movie is this? The Goat Rodeo Sessions with Yo-Yo Ma.
Yep, exactly. The Goat Rodeo Sessions. Absolutely. Read about it. Very cool stuff.
To listen to a Styx concert the other day, and the stupid ice skaters got involved.
Yeah. Before we take this break, however, you should also know that, as the folks in the IRC chat reminded me, DreamHost was broken into as well, and so they've been resetting a bunch of passwords. They have no evidence that customer passwords were taken. They are forcing a change out of caution. And for those of you smart enough to not use the same password as you use everywhere else, you're really kind of ahead of the game. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, or dang near halfway through an entire session of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, and we are right here just as we are every week on the truly magnificent, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned. Lots more to come.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we hurl headlong into our second hour of Sound Bites for the 21st of January, and it is still Anno Domini 2012. How many of you have started writing 2011 on things again?
It usually takes me a couple of weeks.
Yep.
Well, and then I've got 2012 down because it's in my mind, and then in a couple of weeks I'll start doing 11 again.
Yeah, right. It's got to be transferred.
February
into
and March are the
check.
Hard months, right? Yep.
Especially when you're doing checks.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Hulu, the popular online video service, has taken another step to becoming a full-fledged alternative to cable television by commissioning its first scripted original TV show to go live next month. The new political documentary-style drama Battleground is set in Wisconsin. An executive produced by J.D. Walsh, Haggai Shaham, and Mark Webb. It follows Hulu's first original documentary series, Morgan Spurlock's A Day in the Life. The majority of Hulu's program to date has been licensed from its parent companies, News Corp, Walt Disney Company, and Comcast's NBC Universal, as well as other program makers. Andy Forsell, Hulu's programming executive, said Spurlock's show has been a success based on data collected on its audience, but he declined to reveal the program's view counts. Spurlock's series is being followed up with a second season, is being joined by another six-episode documentary series called Up to Speed by Richard Linklater, who is perhaps best known for the movies Dazed and Confused and School of Rock. The challenge for Hulu is to ensure that it generates a return on investment in expensive content like scripted drama, which is typically more costly than producing a documentary or reality show. We can make the economics work. I've got a budget for originals, but there's not the same pressure as a traditional network since we don't have to worry about filling airtime, Forsell said. The original shows will be available on Hulu's free web service rather than just to its paying Hulu Plus subscribers as the startup increases its user base and builds a reputation for original programming. But Hulu chief executive Jason Kilar said the dual revenue model of advertising and subscription fees is key to Hulu's future. Hulu said on Friday it had more than 1.5 million paying subscribers at the end of 2011 and revenue grew 60% to $420 million. Like other web companies trying to bring more TV shows and movies online, Hulu is in a race with rival Netflix, Inc. to buy and develop more content to add to and maintain its user subscriber base. Netflix, which has some 23 million U.S. subscribers, said last March it had secured exclusive rights to the 26-episode television series House of Cards, a political thriller starring Kevin Spacey and directed by David Fincher. It was reported last year that Netflix would spend around $100 million to produce the show. Are you interested in Hulu's original content? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. As we say, fond farewell to Rob Linton, who came in to give a tour to some aspiring entrepreneurs today, and now he's leaving.
Yeah, they literally came up.
Probably going on another cruise.
No, he's got another.
Not that Italian ship, was he?
No. No, he's here, isn't he? Exactly. Exactly. So that's I'm fairly interested in that whole Hulu business. What we're finding now,
Netflix announced something like that a couple of weeks ago.
Exactly, Netflix has announced it. Hulu has announced it. The reality is that there is it used to be when you only had two or maybe three stations, right, and then eventually four, and but it started with just two or sometimes one in an area. What came on television was the best of the best. I mean, that's really, you know, they fought for it, and the best stuff usually came out until politics entered into it, or who was visiting whom. But as you know, hundreds of channels developed, all of whom have to fill content all the time. There's a lot of stuff that is, let us say, not at the highest quality anymore. But even so, there are a lot of series that don't always get made and at a place, you know, that would put them on the air. So they go to places like this and make their pitches. Mm-hmm. Now, when you've got something like what Hulu is doing, Kevin Spacey's in it, for God's sake. David Fincher's directing. Yeah, people are going to snap that up. And then it becomes a battle for who gets to spend the most money on it. And you got to think to yourself, it's always a gamble, but you got to think to yourself that anything that's being produced and directed by David Fincher and starring Kevin Spacey certainly has a place on somebody's agenda somewhere, and that enough people will see it to make it worthwhile.
Who would have thought, though? I mean, I don't know about Steve, but you and I for sure can remember.
Not anymore, I can't.
When TV first came out, and then we had the three channels, and it would go off at midnight.
Yep.
You had the test patterns, and they signed off to where we are now.
And played the national anthem.
Say, just, yep.
Played,
you know,
the national anthem, and they'd go off.
You know, 55 years later, say. Now they're doing 24 hours a day, and now also, you know, and that's how many channels are there. You know, 120-some-odd channels are going. And now to throw into this whole mix, you're also throwing in the internet.
Yep.
And other ways of, you know, getting to different programs and everything else. It's like, whoa. And you and I, you know, and a lot of other of our listeners out there have lived through this to see this whole change.
Yep. When I would be up sometimes at 2 a.m. with my daughter when she was a baby, you know, I'd sit down on the couch and put her on my chest and lean back. So we had a Barca Lounger type couch.
Mm-hmm.
I turn the television on low and I think, seriously, what did people do 20 years ago when they had babies at 2 a.m?
Sit there and listen
you
to
the radio.
You don't
want the light. Well, yeah, you'd have to because you didn't want the light on.
Mm-mm.
And you just want something low in the background, a kind of a murmur to
static
keep the baby.
Noise.
Right.
Yeah.
You'd be listening to the Art Shaw's orchestra from high atop the whatever room in New York City,
or Amos and Andy, or some of the old TV series that are radio series, that we're on.
Right,
you just sit there and listen to them, and like you say, just rock away and that type of stuff.
Yep, and it was pretty amazing to me the first time I realized there was 24-hour television available to me. Pretty astonishing.
Yeah.
And then all the channels. I remember when WXXI came out, channel 21.
Yep.
And then channel 7,
mm-hmm.
which was, I forget the call letter. But
Buffalo.
Local.
Channel 31.
Channel 31, that was it. Channel 31, I forget the call letters.
January 1980, WUHF.
It was the first UHF channel in the area.
I remember when that came out, and finally there was something on kids could watch. Because the networks were all grown up shows, just about.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I remember that too. And now, you know, a new channel starts, and you think, yeah, okay, it's a new channel. So
what we're seeing more and more of now is the internet. That Kevin Spacey does podcasting. A lot of directors and producers and actors are now doing their own, in essence, TV shows on the internet between their big movies, you know, theatrical movies and broadcast television.
Well, the other thing too, though, is like in this. Especially for folks, say they don't have the on-demand or forgot to record a program. Quite often, you can go to that affiliate, look up that particular series,
and watch their network,
watch an older version, you know, say last week's episode of, say, Hawaii Five-0 or one of those others, because it's, you know, rebroadcasted on their webpage, and you can sit there on your computer and sit there and watch it.
Yep.
And it's like, it's putting a crunch on cable. I mean, to be able to do that, you know, because the affiliates are, you know, demanding more money, and giving you less.
Yep.
So, you know, so the internet is becoming, because we're so portable, too. Now, take your iPod, your iPad with you and watch TV on that.
Right. And it wasn't that many years ago that all of the phone companies were saying, oh, get your movies, get your sporting events, listen to radio all day long, do all this other stuff. Now they're saying, yeah, you can do all of that, but you're going to pay us more because we suddenly realized you're actually doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't keep up.
Go back a click in time again, you know, going back to the old radio days. And remember the old TV series Dick Tracy?
Yep.
Where he had the phone and the wrist.
The two-way wrist radio and then the two-way wrist television.
Hey,
companies have built those now.
You can actually have that now.
Well, you can get watches in that. You can sit there and program your VCR or your alarm system at home.
Yep.
You know, if you're in a Wi-Fi area, oh, no problem. Pull it up or do it on your phone. I mean, and the screens on those aren't much bigger than, you know, and doing a lot more. Surfing the internet and, like you say, streaming music. It's wild. And that's why I guess I love the field that we're in, And that's why we've been able to do this, you know, 23 years, because every day something new, better, or something different comes out.
Right.
You know, it's nothing that's ever sat still. Just when we thought, oh, great, you know, 286s are out. Oh, I'm set for life. 386s. And the 486.
I still like that TV commercial where the guy's driving home with the brand new T6, and he sees them putting up a billboard, T7.
Right, yeah, right. Just when you think you got the latest.
Right.
One of the folks in the IRC chat wanted me to remind you, Al wanted me to remind you that KeePass, which we talked about earlier, is spelled K-E-E. P-A-S-S, not okay. K-E-Y, K-E-E-P-A-S-S. And I just said that at the beginning, but it's important to reiterate things like that.
One of my friends happened to comment. She goes, boy, you spend a lot of time on the computer. Yeah, because in our field, you know, day to day, I'm looking up stuff, ordering stuff, and the new stuff that's coming out or proposed to come out. You know, and I mean, that goes everything from motherboards to, you know, now, the other devices, the Nook, the Kindle, and the, yep. that you're tethering to it. Back in the day, and this is what a lot of folks forget, you know, and they say, well, this isn't working with this and this and this. Yeah, sometimes they won't. Because you got to take it back, say, 20 years, when we just had a box, a screen, and a keyboard. And maybe, you know, and then maybe if you're lucky, a printer if you didn't
right.
touch a network. We didn't have the CD-ROM drives. We didn't have the mouses. We didn't have the scanners. Or the, you know, everybody having a scanner. And the other peripherals now that you can tether to your computer. And you got to step back and think about this, folks. It all gels together. Granted, sometimes you might have some glitches here and there. But for the most part, they work pretty dang good.
Yep.
Yep.
And we're almost seeing the decline of the traditional desktop computer as more and more people go with mobile devices. The iPad, the Fire, the Nook. Apple called it the post-PC era, where with netbooks and small laptops, we don't need the big computer anymore.
Well, I gave a talk to the Financial Executives International the other day, and we talked about this a lot, and how really I don't know how much longer we'll be seeing desktops and even laptops. People want to be mobile. They want to be mobile on much more portable, smaller, easier to carry devices. The problem with those, of course, is that they are mostly consumer devices.
Right.
You're really not going to sit down and write the great American novel on your iPad.
That's
it's
I
just
think,
not going to happen.
That's why I think still there'll be a home desktop computer still, only because of the convenience of this larger screen
right.
and being able to use a full-size keyboard. And using a tablet all day.
Well, exactly. But the point I was making was you'll have a desktop at home
yep.
because they're cheaper than laptops.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have your tablet to wander around on the road with.
True.
Where is the market for
laptop?
The laptop?
They're going. I can foresee them going away, especially if they – with the
And over the last couple of years, laptops have been outselling desktops dramatically because people want mobile. And
well,
now we're seeing better and better mobile
well,
devices.
Well, right. You don't yep. need that for mobile anymore. Now, we still need them, for example, in here because there's no Wi-Fi. So I have to have some sort of tablet-y a laptop-y device because I have to plug in a hard line.
They're always going to have their unique yep. niche, but not as popular.
But this is the only place I really need to bring a laptop.
Yeah, but if yep. you wind up getting, an iPad or something like equivalent to that, that has a little more memory. You know, it can store a few more programs and that type of stuff on it.
Right.
That's the only drawback right now, because usually, like on the Mac, you can get an 8 gig, 16 gig, 32, 64 gig,
yep.
you know, size. But once... And that's just a matter of time right now. This is just – we're just talking about a matter of, few years. They're going to have a lot more storage in those devices.
We should start seeing quad processor tablets this year too.
Yep.
Most of them are dual processor. Now we're going to get into quad right. processor.
Right. But again, those are consumer devices.
Yep.
So if you need to be a creator, and there will always be a market for those people who want to take their laptop to a coffee shop and write – Or you know, work in whatever way. And so there will always be that market. But in terms of carrying something around for consumption, it's going to be the iPod, iPad, tablet, Android phone thing. Listen, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and we are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and we're Soundbites right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Oh, you AT&T people will be happy to hear this. AT&T is...
No.
What? Or maybe you won't be.
Well, it's interesting. That when I read this note, you've got a positive take on it. Every other note I've read was a negative.
AT&T is rolling out expanded wireless data plans as consumers are doing more surfing, texting, and emailing on their smartphones and tablets. The company announced the plans, which allow for more data but at a higher price tag, late Wednesday. AT&T's existing customers do not have to change their plans but are given that option. New customers will only be able to select from the new plan sets, which take effect January 22nd. Smartphone customers currently pay $15 for a 200-megabyte data plan, which is about 4 minutes of data. The new option is a 300-megabyte plan for $20. Those who do a bit more on their phones can currently pay $25 for a 2-gig plan, but now have the option for a 3-gig plan for $30. So $5 for another gig. Tablet users currently pay $25 for a 2-gig plan. The new offering includes a 3-gig plan for $30 and a 5-gig plan for $50. AT&T says data usage among customers is increasing about 40% a year, and it wanted to offer customers more data up front. Cell phone and tablet customers who run over their allotted data fees often face hefty fees. Customers are using more data than ever before. David Christopher, Chief Marketing Officer for AT&T Mobility and Customer Markets. Our new plans are driven by this increasing demand in a highly competitive environment and continue to deliver a great value to customers. So does AT&T's new data plan excite you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
All right, I have AT&T.
Good for you.
And I've got the $15 plan.
Right.
But the thing that is I hardly use most of that. You know, I've got it for when I need it. But for the most part, I turn on Wi-Fi.
Yep.
I find more Wi-Fi spots around that I can tap into and use that free Wi-Fi than going into, you know, eating into my 2 gig that I get, you know, for a month for the $15. I mean, I'm glad I have it because there's at times I really need it.
Yep.
And I'm glad I can tap into it. But I, for the most part, I'll go for the free Wi-Fi.
And that's what most of the blogs were reporting this story on, is AT&T raises its prices. Yeah, you're getting more data, but they raise their prices. When in the iPad, with the comparison between data plans, AT&T always had cheaper plans starting at $15, but Verizon's data plans were better value because you got more data for your money.
Right.
And now that's evened out a little more. AT&T's cheapest plan is now going to be $20. Which for 300 megs, that you are getting more data, but their cheapest plan has now gone up in price.
Right, and people are using more data for more things. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's using Siri is using at least twice the data they used to use, and that becomes problematic when, if you go over, you get a huge cost. I was just looking at my phone. I've been doing a lot of Pandora lately, but I've only used about 40 meg. Since the 14th of January, which is just a few days, a week ago. But Google Plus seems to be the big draw on this machine, actually. It's pretty weird.
Actually, I wouldn't want to find something like that for the iPhone, too, to tell you which programs are using the most data. There's a usage tab that tells you how much data overall your phone is using. But I want to know which programs are using the most data so you can adjust yourself that way.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then Verizon themselves will tell you the real number as to how much data you're actually using. Yeah. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
I have a need that I think others might have as well. Can you help me find a simple-to-use scanner that would be well suited to scan checks?
Well,
my need is that we've seen the banks pull back from not returning checks to sending you a check image, and now they want to charge even for that.
Right, and that
wouldn't be able
right.
to scan the checks after they have been endorsed and cashed.
Well, do you want them to be? Do you want them to be text, or do you want them to be
probably
pictures?
Just images.
Picture image, I think, is what I want.
Do you have a smartphone? Take a picture with your smartphone.
I knew you were going to offer that, given what you've just been talking about.
Yep.
But the answer is I don't have.
All right. You can just do a simple $50 scanner.
Pretty much any scanner would work for it. But there's the Neat company and the Neat receipt scanner, specifically designed for scanning receipts, scanning checks. It creates PDFs of them so that you can throw away the paper, recycle the paper copies and have all of your receipts with you. And they make a portable model that's small enough to carry with you for scanning receipts and checks on the road.
Can you spell that for me, Steve?
Neat, N-E-A-T.
N-E-A-T.
Yep.
I see a system.
They're a little expensive.
On TV that's supposed to do away with all of the need to store things.
Yeah, it's probably them, the Neat receipt scanner.
It's the same one?
I think so. Yeah, I've seen them having TV commercials as well.
Okay.
So they have a big full page scanner. They also have small portable scanners.
But any of your typical $50 scanners nowadays that are USB, you can put them on there and do the fronts, do the backs.
Yeah, it's nice to get a scanner with a feeder that can scan both sides of the paper at the same time. The Fujitsu ScanSnap series is like that. They can scan both sides at once, so you don't have to turn the thing over and scan the second side yourself.
Again, it depends on your needs.
Yeah. A lot of the all-in...
scan both sides?
Pardon?
Does the product from Neat scan both sides?
Yes.
Yeah, you only run it through once.
That's one of the reasons they're a little more expensive.
Has two scanners in it.
Yeah, I think they started like $200 because there's two scanners built in, so it scans both sides at once.
Okay.
Yeah, their commercial is Tame the Paper Monster, where the giant monster walks out and is chasing someone with all their receipts.
Mm-hmm. Are those available locally from stores or only through online?
They're probably available in the big electronic stores, maybe even the office supply stores.
Yes. Okay. Sounds like a good lead. Oh, and the software, they provide the software?
Yep.
Easy to use?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. In fact, a lot of them, as soon as you put something in the scanner, the software automatically launches on your computer.
It senses it?
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. Thanks for your help.
You're very welcome. But, yeah, a lot of people are doing that these days, scanning their paper receipts so they don't have to keep track and keep copies of all this paper.
Yeah, Neat receipts are...
And the software, the Neat software especially, that's the one I'm most familiar with, when you scan something, you can tag it. Is this a work expense? Is this a business expense? Is this a home expense? Which then helps you on your taxes later on because you can ask the software, bring me a copy of all of my work receipts so that I can deduct them.
And it looks like the Neat receipts sheet-fed scanner is available at, it seems like the whole line is available at all the obvious office supply stores.
Yep.
So, you should be able to find that with no trouble. There's something not right with this mouse.
Because
the mouse
is You got your
something.
Left and right swapped?
No. It's the middle button is not working.
It's not polite to use the middle button.
Figures you are flipping it off.
Yeah, it's not working right anymore.
Not doing its like scroll thing?
No, it'll scroll. You can't push it. Under Linux, I'm used to doing that all the time because if you have a link and you click the middle button, it automatically opens it in a new tab under Chrome. And suddenly my middle button has stopped playing.
Maybe you've used it so much you've worn it out.
That's very, very possible.
Because you're pushing down on it, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, it's got to be a little toggle switch in there that might be gummed up or I don't know if you can take air to it.
That's one of the things Apple's done on their latest Magic Mouse. There's no physical buttons. It's now a sensor. So the mechanical button won't wear out. The sensor can still fail, but at least the mechanical button won't wear out.
Right. But this this isn't doing it. That's sad. Sad for me.
I say get some compressed air, and I don't know if there's any buttons, or you can pop it just to get inside there a little bit. Say it just might be a little gummed up.
Yeah, it might.
Because, well, that's the other thing folks don't realize. Even with the button, you know, the mice, the oil's from your hands, you know, and the scrolling. Yep.
And this is the iHome miniature mouse, so.
You've had that for quite a while.
I've had that for quite a while.
You usually complain about the retractable cord not retracting.
Well, I actually had, I wonder if I have a third one somewhere. I got them in Woot, in a Woot off.
Oh.
And they sent me a number of them.
Okay.
You know, there was just, there, I can't remember if it was four or five. Yeah. No, it was, Woot has this thing called the bag o' random crap.
Huh?
It costs a buck, and they just send you a bunch of stuff. I've seen people get Wii's and televisions and everything else. Mostly I get actual random crap. But at one point, well, I got an entire phone system for the house once, for, you know, four wireless phones.
When do they have these?
Irregularly.
Irregularly?
And you have to, irregularly. Yeah, and you have to be in. You have to get in because Woot is a site on the web, and you're going to hate me for mentioning it because you get sucked in. Not just you, but everybody.
Well, I get an email every day from them. I have to check out the Woot.
I almost got that cordless phone system the other day.
Yeah.
Was it $40 for a cordless phone and answering machine and four handsets?
Yep. We had one of those from one company, and then they sent me another one in a bag of random crap, which is sitting around waiting for more phones than the original one to die. We've had that for about 10 years.
I don't have a home phone anymore.
Right. So I got a bunch of stuff, and one of the things I got was four or five packs of these little iHome things. Amelia took one, but I had three left, I think.
I might have an extra one.
Well, I might have another one sitting around somewhere. So if I do, I'll just take the little mouse out of that one too.
If your daughter hasn't already taken it,
I have to tell you, I am a huge fan of Woot.
Yeah, Chris, I
might try WD-40. You never know.
No.
I don't think I would.
No. You might be able to use some alcohol, rubbing alcohol or something like that, you know, on a swab. But like I say, if you take it apart, 10 to 1 odds, because that's all it is it's just a little sensor that you're pushing down on. It's a little toggle switch.
Right.
That you're pushing down on, and that toggle switch just might be gunked up because oils from your hands transfers to that and gets in there.
Right.
I got to tell you about this one. I had another machine come in.
Yeah.
Dude, this thing.
Is it time? Is it?
Is
it time? We should, let's not miss the moment, shall we? All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Grab your footy jammies, get them on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. Because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Just don't slap too hard.
I know.
Be gentle.
I can't slap your hand, but I could slap your face.
I can't clap either. It's kind of hurt.
You can't slap back.
Yeah, no why. No high-fiving either.
Right.
No.
Good thing you aren't driving a stick, mister.
I am.
Oh, man.
Oh, I can't.
I bet you've gotten good at it.
We're doing all right with that. You know, it might not be pretty to see, but I'm doing it. Yeah.
Hey, as long as it works.
Exactly. Well, anyways. All right. You know, I'm an ex-smoker. And I'll say that right up front so I know it's hard for folks to quit. Been there, done that, and I don't miss it. I won't sit there and preach to other folks, you got to quit. It's because it's an individual thing. But when a customer comes to me and says, all right, what could I do different to have had this not happen? And after looking at this machine, I literally, when I picked it up, had it set outside because I had to first take the air hose to it. And we took the cover off. And again, you folks have heard me say this before, and some of the fins and that type of stuff, they were all caked up. I have this other cleaner solution that I sit there and spray on, get some of the gunk off. It's for circuit boards. And it was just dripping down because they put these paper towels down in the inside, dripping down yellow. It was a bright yellow. So I got it all cleaned up, brought it on in. Needless to say, I was a little too late to save that that patient, because the years of sitting there and, you know, smoking, constantly smoking, what it does is it forms a film, and it causes a coating, and it causes, instead of those components being cooled off by the fans and doing their job properly, the smoke is being sucked in also, because folks are sitting there right in front of their computer, and the computer is usually right there so they can quick, you know, pop a CD in or something else. That smoke, the ashtray that's sitting right next to it, is also being sucked right on in it, and just creates this coating that now these components that are supposed to be cooled by these fans are finding it very hard to do because they're all gunked up. So I was asked, you know, what, very directly, what could I do to stop that, you know, from this happening? And I said, do you really want to know? He goes, yes, I want to know. I said, well, then you got to stop smoking in front of your computer. He goes, I was afraid you were going to say that. I says, well, I'm only telling you it like it is. He goes, well, I'm thinking of going to a Mac. I said, well, that's okay. But the same rules are going to apply.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you cannot smoke.
There's no fan on a Mac, so that helps a little, I guess.
No, there's fans on all of them. They're just really, really quiet.
Yeah, and they're going to suck that smoke in.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, until you get away from getting away, smoke outside, but not down, you know, down in that computer room. That is going to suck it up, and that smoke travels all over. Like I say, I'm a smoker. My deceased wife was a smoker, you know, so I know what you're talking about. It's not easy, but, you know, if you're complaining because the computers aren't lasting long, it's because of that.
Yep.
And they do a machine in. And I be honest with you, once we diagnosed it, I did it within that day. I had to take it out to the garage.
Yep.
I had to set the machine out in the garage just because of the odor.
Yep.
And even...
Yeah, you don't know how badly everything you own smells when you are a smoker.
All right, here's one thing. Now, Sam, my office manager, she is a smoker. She's slowly quitting. It even bothered her. The smell.
Yep.
Because, you know, it just lingers all around. And so we took it out to the garage and waited for him to pick it up and then gave it to him then. But you know what, folks? Please, you know, I mean, these are electronic devices. Yes, they can take a lot of beating. They can take a lot of abuse and everything else. But this can attribute to some of the failure. It just tires the nicotine. And even with the dust in that in the air, it's just going to make things stick that much more.
Yep. And the problem is that coating is also kind of a heat layer. I mean, it holds the heat inside it, and the heat can't escape.
Well, envision this, folks. You got to think of, you know, we've said it before, you know, you clean out your computers with the dust and all that type of stuff. Imagine having smoking along with that, you know, it's causing the stuff to stick to stuff. It can get pretty nasty.
I had an interesting one similar to that this week where on the back of the computer there's all the dust and crud that gets pulled through it. Well, this one had it all on the front of the computer, on the air intake. So how dusty is the environment that the front of the computer is all clogged?
Yeah, exactly. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 42 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on the wonderful member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 47 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Researchers have successfully stored a single data bit in only 12 atoms. Currently, it takes about a million atoms to store a bit on a modern hard disk. They believe that the IBM researchers believe this is the world's smallest magnetic memory bit. According to the researchers, the technique opens up the possibility of producing much denser forms of magnetic computer memory than today's hard disks and solid-state memory chips. Roughly every 2 years, hard drives become denser, said research lead Sebastian Loth. The obvious question to ask is how long can we keep going, and the fundamental physical limit is the world of atoms, the approach that we use to jump to the very end. Check if we can store information in one atom. If not one atom, how many do we need? Below 12 atoms, the researchers found that the bits randomly lost information or owing to quantum effects. A bit can have a value of 0 or 1 and is the most basic form of information in computation. The group of atoms which were kept at very low temperatures were arranged using a scanning tunneling microscope. Researchers were subsequently able to form a byte made of 8 of the 12-bit atoms. Central to the research, 12-atom bits, rather. Central to the research has been the use of materials with different magnetic properties. Magnetic fields of bits made from conventional ferromagnetic materials can affect neighboring bits if they are packed too closely together. Other scientists thought that was an interesting result, but the move from the lab to production may be some time away. Ready for super tiny, super dense memory? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0465, just like Ben did from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Ben. What's your question?
I've been having some issues with the USB port on my laptop for a while now, and it's just an issue, like, you know, switching between mouses, it just doesn't recognize them. It'll sometimes work, sometimes not, and the problem's kind of come to a head recently, that whenever I recently plugged it in and it suddenly stopped working, and even when I unplug it, the message continues to pop up, USB device not recognized, and it continues to make the this, like, kind of, you know, the error message sound.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. Why were you switching mice?
I have one that I use for transport. It's small, compact, and I have another one that I am more comfortable with. And I also have a tablet.
Right. Okay. So you got some sort of laptop-y thing, and you're switching mice when you go out and home and whatever.
Yeah.
Do you have multiple USB ports on your machine?
I do.
Does this happen on all of them?
One of them is consistently pretty much used for flash drives and stuff, and that seems to be reading. It isn't recognizing them on any of them.
Okay,
it'll do flash drives, or it was before anyway, but it does not like the tablet or either one of the mice.
All right, see here, because here's the thing that I'm wondering.
Mm-hmm.
There are two things that can go wrong. One, of course, is physical, and the other is the driver.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible the driver was in some way damaged.
Okay.
Or you added a device that changed the driver on you. So you might have to go in and check and upgrade to the latest version of the driver. Make sure you've got the latest version. The easiest way to do that is to figure out what your motherboard is, and that should be somewhere in your documentation.
Okay.
Go to the manufacturer's website, the manufacturer of that motherboard, and get the latest driver for that specific model, series of motherboard.
Chipset.
The chipset on the motherboard, right. And then install that mouse, that USB driver.
If by chance you can't see, you know, if a lot of folks misplace the manuals and all that.
Okay, yeah.
With the machine turned off, if you take the side off, you're going to be looking for...
Laptop.
Oh, it's a laptop?
Laptop, yeah.
Yeah.
But, it's still the model number.
Right, skip that, yeah. Skip taking the side off, but physically look at the connector, because what happens is when you plug and unplug a lot, there's four little pins inside the USB port. They can start to lift up a little bit, and eventually they can bend, they can touch the port next to them, they can break off. Yeah. In fact, I was just reading the same question on a different blog this morning. One of the recommendations we've seen is to get a little short USB dongle, and you can get them for, you know, like $5, that you plug into your laptop. And then you plug all your other devices. It's probably too late for you at this point if the port's already damaged.
Mm-hmm.
But then you plug your mice and your tablets and your printers and your flash drives into that USB extension cable.
Okay.
And then when you damage that $5 cable, you can replace it really easy. A lot easier than replacing the $500 laptop logic board.
I've seen them snap off that little tab in there, too.
Yep. So take a look at physical damage in that port, just in case, because that can sometimes happen when you plug and unplug a lot.
Okay. I'm okay with working without a mouse for a while. I have the touchpad works fine. Not ideal, but, you know, okay. The USB device not recognized message continues to pop up, even though I've turned off the computer, restarted it, and it continues to make the error.
That tells me that the problem is definitely physical and that you may have a bent up pin.
Which is crossing,
shorting
out against another pin, so the computer thinks there's a USB device being plugged in.
Okay.
Which it can't recognize, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So what you can sometimes do there is unplug power, take out the battery, and then use little tiny tweezers or something to try to bend the contact so it's not touching it. You'll never be able to use that port again, but at least you can bend the contact away so it's not touching the other contact.
Okay.
Yeah, you can usually see it.
Yes?
Usually you can see it as you look down in it, straight down there, like I say, Steve. And be careful, though.
Yeah. If you have a slot on the laptop, a lot of them will have a PC card slot, then you can add a USB card to get more USB ports if you need them.
What do you mean? Like a card slot?
Yeah, a lot of laptops will have either PC card or express card slot on the side of it for adding expansion cards to the laptop. A lot of them don't have that anymore because it used to be for adding a modem or adding Ethernet or adding Wi-Fi, and now that's all built into the laptop, so a lot of companies have stopped putting a slot on their laptop.
Okay.
But if you have got a card slot, maybe what you do is you buy two different USB card slot devices, and one you plug into all the devices you use at home.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, you plug in all the devices you use on the road and just switch those back in and out because with that long slide in, you line them up better and you have less chance of damaging the pins inside the PC card slot.
Okay. What would the PC card slot, is that on the back of the computer? Is that on the front of the computer? Is that the front?
It could be anywhere depending on the model of your laptop, but it's usually a smallish
with
slot.
With a little spring-loaded door covering it.
Sometimes, yeah. But check your manual. That will tell you whether or not you have one and where it is.
Would that be labeled SD/MMO?
No, that's a memory card slot.
Okay.
That's different, yeah.
Yeah, slightly different. Yeah. All right, we're done. Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you, Ben, for calling. We have to go. I want to thank Ben for calling. I want to thank all of you who have called. And for all of you who didn't call, I don't know why not. It's ridiculously easy to do. So do it next week, but we're done for this week. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. We're all just going to go away now. Linda and George are coming in. They're going to do some German music, which is some terrific stuff, and you should be listening. But we are done for the week. Want to thank you all. We are Soundbites right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.
Here are the club count.